Welcome.
You're with Dr. Harris, Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr. We are broadcasting here out of West Fresno. We have had some technical difficulties this evening. Not quite sure. Maybe it was the weather. Not sure what it is, but we were able to get on. I noticed we had a few folks who was on our live stream, but was not able to get on and see what was going on. I didn't even know what was going on, so I know you couldn't. But anyway, we was planning the I Have a Dream, Dr. King speech. I when you really sit down and listen to Dr. King, you would really understand that what Dr. King said back in the 1960s is what we're dealing with today. It's sad that we're dealing with it, but it is what it is. Being international civil rights leader here in America, it's really sad that we are still dealing with a lot of the racism he was dealing with back in his time. How can I, we're dealing with environmental racism. We're still dealing with police brutality. Environmental racism. We're still dealing with a lot of the illnesses that Dr. King is dealing with. You would think things would be different. Things would be better. Things would be equal. Things would be fair. Things would be honest. But sadly to say, we're not dealing with any of that. We're dealing with more systemic racism. We're dealing with more institutionalized racism. We're still dealing with the police brutality that Dr. King was dealing with. Listen to that brother, preach and on different occasions throughout the country. All I can say is wow. I'm dumbfounded for words right now because, being a young minister and being a young activist, civil rights leader, I must say Dr. King tried. He really, really tried to make things better for us today. He really was a very sincere brother. He was a revolutionary. He was an activist. He was a father, a pastor. And it's really sad how his life was ended. His life was ended. What's all of us, white, brown, yellow, blue. He took the bullet. And it just sat in my heart, just know that, you know, even the, you know, the things I have to deal with on a daily basis, you know, here in America, and to know what the king had to deal with on a daily basis, it's just really, you know, I'm not understanding why black people here, why we're such a hated people. I'm not clear. I don't understand. I still don't understand why the people that we have to continue to deal with the silliness, brutality, the systemic racism that we have to deal with in America, the environmental racism that we have to deal with here, the food source that the white man created to teach us how to eat the wrong foods and gave us the scraps off the table, you know, which now, you know, give us, you know, sickness, hypertension, high blood pressure, all these things that, you know, was because of how the white man wanted to exploit the world, you know. We're at a state right now where we are at a genocide right now, you know. We have children who are tied up in the foster system. We have families who are dysfunctional. We have a community that is dysfunctional. But when you look at the heritage and where black folk came from, you will see that we adopted, you know, all this bad behavior. You know, we, you know, black folks come from a stage of being kings and queens and, you know, rulers and. But then, you know, when we came to America, we were programmed to and accept and was taught how to do all this bad behavior that the white man has taught us. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, things here in America has not has gotten worse, very, very bad. And so the question becomes, you know, what do we do? What do we do as a people? We are, at a genocide situation in America. You know, crack cocaine was placed in our community by the federal government. Same government that is shut down now, you know. People not, there's some public service is not going to be able to get food stamps. You know, we constantly label people as illegal immigrants and aliens and all this type of silliness, you know. And so we're I'm really in a bad state of mind right now. You know, I really don't know what the future looks like for any of us right now. I just don't know. It's really scary to me right now. You know, I'm very concerned about my people and what's going to happen to them. You know, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to eat and have shelter. A guy just died, you know, right out on Fresno Street. You know, he probably froze to death. You know, and that's kind of where we are right now. You know, that's where we are as a people, as a society, that we just don't care about poor people. We just don't care about poor people. And it's very embarrassing to call myself an American when we don't even take care of the poor. We criminalize the poor, them shame victims, feel like they're nobody. Who has the right to do that? Who has the right to, just because someone is don't have a car or don't have a home, what gives us the right to call them street people? As this government here in Fresno label, we call them street people. And then we criminalize them, we throw them in jail, we throw away all their belongings, we make them feel like a piece of nothing. So, Dr. King's speech, "I Have a Dream." How much of his dream has become a reality? Just think about it. How much of Dr. King's dream has become a reality? For a selective few, or for the masses of black people? And people. This is why the saying is, do for self and be a slave. You know, we're trying to teach people independence, how to grow your own food, how to do for yourself. You know, don't depend on the government. Just never cared about your ancestors. Put in is what you get out. You know, put nothing in, no, take nothing out. So this is where we are at 21st century, 2019. We're still fighting. We're still fighting cause that Dr. King did. And he didn't have to he didn't have to march and protest and go to jail. I mean, he was a young man, he died, I believe, at age 39. Think about that a lot, you know, when I'm marching and protesting and dealing with, you know, racist people, and, you know, they're calling you names and so, you know, it's a sacrifice. You know, I'm learning at the age 48 that
this whole journey of life is a sacrifice. It's something that, you know, is individual walk. You know, I mean, I've given up great $30 an hour to come back to West Fresno to work. I did because of the love of the community. That's why I did it. You know, I could be living large. I could be living up in Bluffs. I make it $1,000 an hour. But I came back to West Fresno. You know, many people know how much I sacrifice. And all of us have to sacrifice. We always think about the day when King walked out on the balcony and he was shot. For why? Why would you shoot someone who nobody? Why would you hate someone who hasn't hurt nobody? So, you know, I just think that it's just a it's just part of the American culture. You know, any black man that stands up has to understand if you stand up for the justice, liberation, equal fairness of black people, the ultimate result is that you're going to get assassinated publicly. You're going to get assassinated character, you know. And now we have a government that's shut down now. The strongest, supposed to be the strongest government in the world, and we're shut down. And when a government shut down, that means everything's shut down. People are not, you know, not going to be able to get their Section 8 paid. They're not going to get food stamps for their children. I mean, you know. So I'm really, really concerned right now. And I don't, you know, and I look at people every day, and it's like they're just walking around like nonchalant, like everything is okay. Everything is fine. You know, the sky is blue, you know. We're in a freaking crisis right now. We're in a crisis. We are in a crisis mode right now. The freaking government is shut down. There's people that's supposed to be working at the IRS and USDA. They're at home. So I don't know. We have some callers online. I don't know. I guess I take things to heart so much, and I just, you know, and case in point, this is why the timing of the Freedom School is so important right now. Because if the government decides not to open up for the rest of the year, what are you going to do? That's the question. What are you going to do? If the grocery stores don't have no food in it, what are you going to do? See, we have become so dependent on the U.S. government to do for us. What are you going to do when there's no food? Go to the grocery store. I'm waiting for someone to answer that question. The grocery store is closed. There's no food. What are you going to do? it's a point right now where we have to start being more proactive to where we can start getting bags of rice and beans and putting them in big containers and trying to figure. I mean, what happens if the U.S. government says, or PG&E says, listen, we're not giving out no more gas. Since the government closed, we're closed. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? The hospitals are closed. What are you going to do? You can't eat. You can't go to the hospital. What are you going to do? Do you know how to go out in the backyard and deal with herbs, olive oil, a plant? You become so dependent on this government. And our ancestors didn't depend on this government like we depend on it today. That's why they built Black Wall Street. We had our own grocery stores. We had our own taxi cab. We had our own churches. We had our own pharmacy. We had our own restaurants. We had everything. But what do we have today? And here you are with a government that's closed down and everybody walking around just getting there, grinning and laughing like everything is okay. I'm sitting here bothered tonight. I have kids and grandkids and friends, and they have kids. I have a church. I'm worried about all of them now. This is a serious thing right now. You know, tomorrow I'm going to my school, Freedom Center, and I'm going to start going through all of my seeds. I'm going to start purchasing more seeds. Because if you don't have any seeds, you can't grow anything. Stop being dependent on this government and start doing for yourself. It just makes me sick. Everybody just want to have a good time all the time. Not everybody, but some of everybody just want to have a good time all the time. And here we are in crisis mode, fourth quarter, no seconds on the clock. And the government is closed. I'm going to stop talking right now. I'm getting angry and upset right now. Because I just see a disaster coming down. I see a train wreck coming right now. We're going to go to the lines right now. This is Dr. Harris with Black Lives Matter. So I apologize for the technical difficulty. The other is raining, and I don't know what's going on with the circus, but it took me at least 20 minutes to get back on. We have a caller at 1111. I'm trying to see. Then we have another caller at can't even see straight right now. But let me go to caller 111 first and see if they have anything to say about what's going on in America. Maybe I'm paranoid. Maybe everything is okay. You know, maybe I'm the one that need to go have a Coke and a smile and sit down and be quiet and read a book. Maybe it's me. You tell me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm seeing everything wrong right now. But from what I see, with a government shut down that controls a whole country from food to housing to the security of our country. I mean, we sitting up here talking about build a wall in Mexico, and if another country wanted to attack us, who's going to work? I'm going to the lines right now. Welcome to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show, caller 1111. 1111, you have anything to say this evening?
Hi, how are you?
Great, 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 great. Thank you for calling in to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. We're just sitting here just freestyling tonight. I don't really have anyone to interview, just talking about the country or anything you want to talk about. Go ahead.
How are you?
Great, great.
Oh, that's good. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Oh, that's good. So what you been up to?
Nothing much. You have anything you like to say about what's going on with the country being shut down? You think that's good or bad or?
How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. We're gonna go to caller 3-3-6-6-3. I think that's 3-3-6-6. I don't have my glasses on. Caller 3-3-6-6. Welcome to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. We're here talking about I'm here talking about the government shutdown and people just walking around like, you know, everything is okay and, you know, just sitting up under the shade tree, playing the music outside their house, cutting their grass, and the government is shut down. People are not going to be able to get food, their food stamps, Section 8 pay. We have people dying on the streets right now here in West Fresno. Welcome to our show. You have any thoughts about that?
Yes. Hi, my name is Maria. I think it begins like with a conversation like this, like somebody like saying, hey, something is wrong, but everybody's walking around like it's nothing wrong, walking around like, you know, not everybody, like you said, but a good majority of people, I don't know if they really diving into like getting prepared. And you have to have that conversation in order to know that you even have to get prepared, you know. And, I work with young adults. A lot of them, a good majority of them affected by this shutdown. They have, first we like stay updated on what's going on, what's the status, you know, day to day on the shutdown. But more than that, like you said, it's not something to go around and, you know, well, everything gonna work itself out. No, this should like be jarring people into getting prepared mode, you know. And some of that is making sure what you have, you know, you stretch it. Like you said, is storing up on different type of foods that, you know, won't perish, stuff that, you know, having seeds to be able to grow, you know. But, like, really looking at that, like, okay, what if, you know, being in that what if mode, what if it is like this? What if this continues to go on? What if it just, the government just totally shut down? You know, but also understanding like our capabilities when we depend on the government and come to depend on the government. It's not just low income people that's dependent on the government. You know, you got people that have government jobs, you know, that take care of them pretty well. And for that to this is affecting across all boards, but we know it's going to severely impact those that have already been struggling and don't even have the hope to, like, you know, pull themselves up and say, well, let me find another way, you know. And I think that if we know our community is hurting, it's going to be hurt even more. This is when we're going to find out what our leaders are truly made of. You know, are they going to get out to the masses? Are they going to pull together and, you know, be able to feed the people until a plan develops? Are they going to spread the word about stuff? Are they going to push to move things that can put the pressure on the government not shutting down, or put the pressure on reallocating monies and so forth to give people chances to work? More jobs that don't depend on government dollars, creating those kind of businesses, you know. And in the Black community, because we know it's going to be severely impacted, you know, pulling together, it was a time where, you know, people help one another. Like, you work together to store some up. You grow this, I grow that, we put it together, you know. Not indulging in the things that, like, we indulge in just for that feel-good moment. You know, that those shoes or this, you know, whatever it is, you know, just stuff that you just don't necessarily have to have, or you don't have to have at all, you know, and just like going back to that, you know, and pulling together, and our leaders stepping up and being leaders and finding some resources so we don't have complete chaos. It's their responsibility to manage and lead the city. So, you know, they have a bigger responsibility because they have a bigger, they're given a lot. So a lot is required of them. So I would like to see the true quality come out of our leaders and for them to start putting things in place, you know, start taking from here and putting over there if they have to, because if they don't do that, then people are going to get desperate. And when they get desperate, they'll do things to feed their family.
So let me ask you a question. So I'm going to be devil's advocate here. Now, you stated that the leaders, right, should step up, which they should. They should, you know, do more allocating. I'm thinking you're making reference to the government, maybe the local government, the, you know, city hall, board of supervisors, what have you. But at the same time, those so-called leaders are the same people who have went out and destroyed homeless people encampments, the same city hall, the police department, are the same people who are hurting people at the same time. So should we, as a people right now, I'm just asking a question to those out in the radio land, should we depend on them, or should we depend more on other? It seems to me that I think that we give those in local political offices too much credit, because we think they should know, but a lot of them don't know. And they're not hurting for anything. You know, their mortgage getting paid. I mean, our city council get paid almost $100,000 a year. The board of supervisors get probably $125,000 or $130,000 a year. So they're doing great. You know, they're not living under the bridge.
They're not touched by it the same way.
Sleeping on the sidewalk. They're not not walking around the city with a shopping cart, or I mean, they don't even know what that lifestyle is, right? Much as they know is, oh, you're just an eyesore to the city of Fresno. We need to take your shopping cart to tear down your encampment. We need the only housing, and this is the behavior and the history of the city of Fresno, abusing people here. Time after time after time. And so it's like, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking tonight, I was trying to get online and it's raining and I don't know what was going on, but I finally got on. And I'm saying, you know, I'm driving around in my bus and I'm looking at people, you know, and it's like everything is okay, you know? And I'm sitting there saying, people are worrying about their Section 8 not being paid, and the people who are paying Section 8 to is worrying about paying their loan. And so it's like a trickle-down effect, like a domino. You know, you hit one domino, you hit the other domino, and that domino, and all the dominoes. And I'm saying, look, we are in crisis mode. We need to figure out what are we going to do. Listen, if PG&E said, tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, we're not giving out no more gas because the government is shut down. We're not giving out no more electricity because the government is shut down. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Now, that's extreme, but it can happen.
It can happen.
Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, many people thought that this wall that Trump is just building and don't care about the American people eating or having housing. He's just worried about building that wall. Many people think that didn't happen, but it's right now. So should we put our faith in the city government that's connected to the national government or should we, I'm not saying not hold them accountable, but or should we spend more time working with one another and trying to figure out a plan of action on, okay, you know, my house is going to have five barrels of black eye pimpé. This house over here is going to have five cans of rice. This house over here is going to have a room full of bottled water. This, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we're in a crisis situation here.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I mean, what? If these
school,
leaders can't come through, then they need to not be there. We need to be self-governed.
Exactly. Maybe the people need, we need to create our own government.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
You know, we have another caller online. Let's get them in on this conversation. 6108. 6108, welcome to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. Broadcasting here off the West Coast here in Fresno, California. 6108, welcome to the show. You like to get in on this conversation?
Yes, sir. And thanks for taking my call, by the way. And good evening to you all.
Good evening.
Yeah, I was. I noticed the title on your show page on Blog Talk Radio talked about Dr. King's "I Have a Dream" speech, and
yeah.
I just wanted to kind of point out sort of a modern observation of, like, in general, where Black culture is now, and how Black culture has become the reverse of that. Where Dr. King said, judge a person not on the color of their skin, but on the content of their character. Today's Black generation is saying, don't judge me on the content of my character. Rather, I want to be judged by the color of my skin. And the reason I say that is this victim mentality, which is literally a way of escaping personal responsibility, is saying, don't hold me accountable for my life choices based on the choices I made. Rather, any failure I have in life is only because of my skin. Therefore, you can only judge me based on the fact that I'm Black. So therefore, I'm not accountable for anything I do in life. And so any bad thing that happens in my life, it's not my fault, it's my color's fault. And that's what I see permeating a lot of the, especially the younger people, they've bought into that way of thinking completely. And it's kind of a travesty because it's exactly the opposite of what Dr. King was trying to get people to do. But I don't know how we change that.
Well,
Maria,
I think that's
like
across the whole scope. I think that's across the scope of every race, is you have people that don't want to take accountability for things that they do. Like, Black Lives Matter is not about trying to say, oh, you know, don't judge us by our character. It's like, don't overlook the fact that we matter just as much as anybody else matter. So we, and it's not about excuses, it's about reality, it's about facts, it's about the disadvantage that we have been put up against and continue to be. And I don't think Black people as a whole think that we are making excuses. We are a strong race of people, and we have survived everything. Everything thrown at us. So we far from play, we don't play victims. We're not victims. We are survivors. So, you know.
Actually, a lot of people play the victim card. I mean, like, I mentor a lot of young
people. Any race can play, any person can play a victim.
Don't try to put it into a race. People in general can play victims. Of what I deal with, because I mentor a lot of young men between the ages of 16 and 24. And so me and my brothers and some of my friends of us that are from the same neighborhood and from the same high school, when we all went to college and, you know, have successful careers and businesses now. So we go back to the same high school we used to go to, and we work with, you know, the administrators tell us about some of the at-risk students, the kids, the guys that are on the verge of dropping out, or they're struggling, or they got some, you know, rough background. And we work with these young guys a lot. And when we talk to them, what I see consistently, every single one of these guys I talk to, the same thing. Every personal failure they have, whether they're not taking the study seriously or they're about to get involved in gangs or drug dealing or whatever it may be, every time we try to talk about why are you doing these things, immediately they bring up, they talk about racism, they talk about white supremacy. I mean, it's unbelievable. And when we try to put the emphasis on, well, where's your personal responsibility for what you're doing? They try to say, well, no, I'm just a byproduct of a bad environment. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Let me get this. Because you live in a bad environment, you're not capable of thinking and making choices between right and wrong, and that doesn't matter. And that's the mindset they have. And so what Black Lives Matter brings to the table is nothing that's beneficial to the Black community whatsoever. What we need to focus on is empowering individuals to start taking personal accountability for themselves and stop shifting the blame onto something else. That's why we have a generation of young men.
So how do you do that? As a youth development professional, how do you do that? As a person who was hired and trusted to be able to help these youth, to help empower these youth to change their lives. I volunteer my time too, but for them to entrust you to even volunteer your time and entrust you to help empower these youth to see their true potential and their full potential, how do you help them do that as opposed to?
Well, it's pretty easy. I mean, what we do is we try to give them a general understanding of how America works. And one of the things they often say to us is they feel like they have this general feeling of that the system is rigged against them. That the system is designed for them to fail. And so the
analogy
I
would
show, right, but the point is the analogy I give to these young guys is pretty simple because a lot of them, for example, they love to play video games, right? They all love to play Madden and NBA.
A lot of kids know how to play video games. A lot of grown-ups know how to play video games. So how do you prove to them that that's not true?
That's what I was trying to get done to say here. But the analogy I use.
You're talking about
video games. But that's the point. Just hear me out first. I use the analogy of video games to let them understand what the situation is. And I tell them this. I say, listen, imagine if somebody went and bought the game Madden, went home, started to play the game. They didn't know the controls. They didn't know the rules. They didn't know the strategy of the game at all. And they kept losing. And then that person comes to you and says, this game is rigged against me. It's designed for me to lose. I always ask each one of those young men, what would you say to that guy? And they all say the same thing. Oh, he needs to either read the manual to learn how to play the game, or he needs to talk to somebody who does know how to play the game and is good at it and they can teach him how to play it. And I say, bingo. That's the exact same thing when it comes to understanding finances, how to make money, how to develop your money, how to develop your credit, understanding the rules of making money in America. And a lot of these young guys, once they get that, when that light bulb goes off in their head, and they start to work with us and learn about how to manage your money, how to develop it, how to save it, how to develop your credit, all these things. I've seen these young guys go from hopeless and nihilism and having this mentality that everything is set up for me to fail and I can't succeed no matter what I do, to now they become determined entrepreneurs that have a grind and a determination. And I've seen these guys – I've seen a 16-year-old kid who was growing up in a broken home with his mother was on drugs. Terrible situation. He was about to drop out of high school. He started working with this kid. He changed his mentality. He saw there was a hope in a way. He just had to seek out knowledge. And when he did that, now the kid is 24, owns several businesses, and owns several rental properties. And so what I'm trying to say is instead of feeding people more nihilism and more hopelessness and trying to convince people that the system is set up for you to fail, rather what you need to do is learn the rules to the game and have the willingness to have the hard work and discipline and sacrifice required to be successful. And if you do that, doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, you can be successful. That's what people need to hear. No, they don't need to hear anymore of this hopeless, you're stuck in a racist country that's designed for you to fail, and no matter what you do, you're always going to be in the bottom. That's nonsense. There's a lot of black men and women in this country who are successful because even with those odds, we're still successful. You're not going to make it.
We are making it.
I'm glad you volunteered your time to invest in the lives of young black people. Do you have to do the same thing for white kids?
Do you have to teach white kids the same thing?
Well, it seems like our brother here don't want to get in a dialogue. He wants to
you and I can't get a word in, and that's not how I run my radio show. I like for one to talk, one to listen, open up a dialogue. If you're going to come on my show and feel that you're going to dominate the conversation, don't even call in. We are here on this show, Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter show. I name my show because I'm a black man. My life matter. You know, the question that, my brother here, I'm assuming he's a brother, I'm going to call him a brother, if he, whatever nationality is that it seems that he said that Black Lives Matter is a bunch of rhetoric and that we're wasting our time using the terminology Black Lives Matter. The question I like to ask people, for 400 years of slavery, did our ancestors' lives matter? When we were working on plantations from sun up to sun down, working for free, being lynched, being murdered, being raped, men being raped, children being raped by white people. This is the same country, my friend, you just called in, that you're saying that this country is not racist. This country was built racism. This country was stolen from the Native Americans. Black Wall was destroyed by a government, by the U.S. government in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There were over 23 something black towns built here in America by black people that were burnt down to the ground. And case in point, I can use. So Tulsa, Oklahoma was supposed to be passed down to my generation. It didn't get to me because it was destroyed and burnt down by racist U.S. government Ku Klux Klan that dropped bombs on our people. They asked for Tulsa, Oklahoma. Black folks did that. And even after the white folks bombed it, on their butt, and they put up tents trying to rebuild their community. White folks didn't go back in there after they tore it up, bombed it, and looted their community. They didn't get no help. So how are you going to sit up here and tell me that America is not racist? It's the most racist country in the land. It was built off thievery. It was built off rape. It was built off murder. It was built off lynching. So to tell me that Black Lives Matter is a bunch of rhetoric. Well, let me give you my credentials, since you seem to think that we're the city. I mean, you're talking to some educated people.
Educated people.
On the phone, on the phone, my friend. Okay. Google my name, and you'll find out who I am. I have built an institution called the Fresno Freedom School. We teach independence. So everything saying that you do, and I commend you for doing what you're doing. I really do. Stones and sticks at other folk because they feel that they're doing what's right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who can live, walk in this USA and say not racist? It's the most racist country that's ever lived. Why do you think Dr. King was assassinated? Do you think if Dr. King was alive today, he wouldn't be marching with the Black Lives Matter movement? Yes, he would. Because he understands the people being marginalized, police brutality. I'm profiled in my own community. I'm a black man. I'm a pastor, and I'm profiled. So if I know I'm being profiled, I know my young black men in the community being profiled. I mean, so, you know, we you can't come on my show and want to dominate the conversation I want to hear everyone, but I want people to respect each other's space. I'd like to bring you back on, but I have to put you on pause because I have to say what I have to say. In a dialogue with a caller, Maria, you were stating a point. You go ahead and state your point. We'll go back to the caller.
Yeah, I just want to know, you know, how can you – he didn't prove that it wasn't racist. Like, you selling these young people a falsehood in a manner, you know. You telling them, okay, build like this. And like you said, that's great. We can teach our children the same thing, you know. That's good. If you really want to give back and you really want to invest in young people and in your community in America, yeah, that's good. Go out and teach them, hey, this is how you build some wealth if they don't know how to do that. You know, but, yeah, same thing. Just, you know, all the stick throwing and trying to devalue the Black Lives Matter just prove why we have to have movements like Black Lives Matter, you know, because people try to act like we're nothing, come from nothing, and our lives don't matter. I meet a lot of – I work with young people, too, that's been through a lot, and I see resilience. I see persistence. I see perseverance. I don't see people making excuses for themselves. I see them trying, you know, and I see them trying hard. And when somebody give them a chance, they value it. And when they know that you value them and they're valuable, they care and they do more. And I've seen a lot of success stories. And I've seen just stories where the families were just stabilized because somebody believed in them, made them feel valued, encouraged them. You know, we need a lot of that in our community because we have been so devalued by society. The narrative that's put out about Black people, this whole, you know, I just don't even like how he just played all into this stigma of, yeah, you know, they come in and they're all messed up and this and this and that. Like, you know, they don't deserve respect. They don't deserve that care or that just respect. It just really comes to respect that they don't deserve respect. You know, like because of what they've been through and because of how it's affected them, that they don't matter unless they think this way, unless they do that way. But our approach is we're going to show you that you care. We're going to show you that you're valuable. And when people know that they are valuable and when people know that they are cared for, that brings the best out of them. That means a lot because everybody is not out there doing that. You know, and in particular, Black people, we are torn down in every manner, from denying us loans, gentrification, not giving us jobs. They did a study where it was a white man with a record that went in and applied for a job, and they made all the resumes the same, except for the white applicant had a criminal record. The Black applicants had, like, college graduate and so forth. They sent them out on real job interviews, same people, and they would have rather had hired a white person with a criminal record over a Black college graduate with experience, more experience than the person with the prison record. So the playing field has never been even. It's the playing field is good, you know, for those Americans considered privileged. They get a head start. And every time we're trying to catch up, we get pushed back. They say it's almost like red light, green light. Oh, no, sorry. You got to go back and start from the beginning. You know, we always have to start from the beginning, even with tearing down Wall Street, Black Wall Street. Oh, you're doing too much. You're getting too far ahead. Oh, start from the beginning, you know. And that's the weapon that America has used against us, that power, domination, control, first by the gun, you know, to continue to say, no, start from the beginning. We have the capability. We totally have the capability to push ahead. We built wealth in America. You know, everybody is like these privileged people. They privileged because they stole that from us. They stole that from our sweat. They stole that from our blood. They stole that from our efforts. You know, so we know how to get ahead. But now you keep pushing us back and saying, nope, start from the beginning. Like, oh, I bet you can't do it again. Bet you can't catch up again. And we show, because we that kind of people, we are the bloodline of kings and queens and royalty and strength and wisdom. We continue to push ahead, and it's always pushed back. That's what they call excuses, is them annihilating us and pushing us back and saying, start again. We're going to tear it all down. They fear us.
Well, you know, my 6108 will get you right in on the show. Is that, you know, I can say I feel him, okay? I feel him, but I'll leave it at that. My point is that we still live in a racist country. It was racist in 1921. It was racist when Marcus Garvey was here. It was racist when Thurgood Marshall was here. It was racist when Megan Everett was here. It was racist when Dr. King was here. It was racist when the U.S. government assassinated all the Black Panthers when they was here. And it was still racist when President Obama was here. And it's sure darn racist right now with Trump as the president. So
right.
The fiber of America is racist. Now, you think that I'm going to tell my Black son, I don't care how much, you know, geometry I give him, trigonometry, math, science, I can give him every bit of education that he needs to apply for a job. But I better also let him know that the color of his skin, he's going to come up against racism. And it's my job as a father and a Black man to teach him how to deal with racism. It's not always about reacting to the racism, but it's how you approach it. And so, you know, I can't buy my caller saying that, you know, we're feeding a bunch of rhetoric, because I've been profiled in my community. I've been at gunpoint in my community as a pastor. Okay. And I know many other pastors that's been profiled. I had to pull over because I seen a pastor pull over by the cop just to make sure nothing happened to him. I mean, so you mean to tell me that, you know, all of the police shootings that we've had in this country when it comes to Black men, that was just rhetoric? That could have been my son. That could have been my church. That they live in a racist country that has never loved their ancestors since day one, 400 years of slavery. We're going to bring this caller in, 6. I can't even see. They got my glasses on. 6108. 6108, welcome to the show. 6108.
Yes, thanks again. And to your points that you're bringing up, I don't disagree with the things you brought up. My issue is that when we're talking to men, okay, to the young ladies on the show, what your name is, but what you were talking about, that's fine if you're addressing women. But men should not think in that manner. Men should not have this mentality of, I need to be valued or people need to care about me, because as a man, fundamentally, that's not how you're supposed to operate. You're supposed to operate under emotion or feelings or value. No, that's all nonsense. As a man, no one cares about you in this world. A man's role is to be tough, to be disciplined, to think logically, to think critically, to have a problem-solving mindset, and understand that he's going to be tasked with a tremendous responsibility, not only to take care of himself, but he's going to eventually have to take care of a family. So a man is not allowed to think that way. A man's mentality should not be, woe is me, look at the card I was dealt. No, a man's mentality is, regardless of the card I'm dealt, regardless of this wall that's in front of me, regardless of what opposition comes towards me, unless they kill me, they're not going to stop me, period. That should be every man's mentality. unless you've accepted some form of mental slavery, then no man should think that way. That's all my point is. And there's a lot of weak men in the black community now because they've accepted such a victim mentality that they've allowed their masculinity itself to be weakened and to act and think emotionally, which is not something a man should do. So my emphasis and what I tell these young men is simple. Responsible for your life. And one day you're going to be responsible for your children. And your children are going to need to be taken care of. They're going to need to be fed. They're going to need a house. And they're going to need to have clothes. All that's going to cost money. And so you've got to formulate in your mind, how am I going to make money to take care of myself and eventually take care of my children? That's your goal. That's what you should be thinking about more than anything else. And so what's important is to gain knowledge and information of how to make money, how to manage your money, and how to grow your money. That's what the number one most important thing that every man should be thinking about.
Okay.
I work 70% of the people I work with are young males, and trust me, before they'll even listen to you or accept what you're teaching them or accept you helping to empower themselves and lifting themselves up, they're going to have to know that you care.
No, they're going to have to realize.
I've been
that
in youth development for 30 years, and they're going to have to know that you care to affect them and to really be effective in helping them change around their lives and change that whole narrative around where they're not feeling sorry for themselves and they do stand up as a man. They're going to have to know that you care.
No. That's the
opposite. Any young person I ever seen change their life had to know that somebody believed in them and cared and knew they could do it. I know they can stand up and be me.
You shouldn't care about them. What I'm saying is they need to understand as a man fundamentally. As a man, no one cares about you when you're a man. Men and women are very different. Women, your problems are taken more seriously than men.
I agree that men and women are different.
Business. That's my point. So men have to understand the world views men differently than women. When a woman has
They have to understand that in addition to.
No, but they have to understand that people don't care about men's problems. A man, no one cares about your problems. People just say,
really?
Toughen up, suck it up.
I care about men's problems. I got three sons.
I'm talking about from men. For men, we understand that we have tasks to try to figure it out and handle our problems. We don't need to go and tell other people and get people to be sympathetic towards us. That's not how men operate. Men have to understand you got to fix it or no one's going to give it.
Here's the problem, sir. I just want to throw this out for conversation. I understand the piece about you're talking about the men and the men got to be strong and, you know, can't make excuses. I get that. I understand it. I have my own school. I have boys. So that ideology that you're saying right now, I need to be strong. They don't need to quit. But here's been the problem in America. Okay, hear me out for a second. I think it was me, and not in all cases, because women are raised strong. Okay, can't say that women are not really strong. They want basketball. Okay, so we can't say that. But on a larger scale, the black male in the home has been absent. Right? I think you agree with me with that. Right? It has been absent, and it's been absent for a reason. Okay, now let's go back a little bit in America. It was the United States government when they came up with this welfare system. Okay, they said that in order for this family to get welfare, now family, man, woman, and children, the U.S. government, which we know was controlled by white men, said that the man has to leave the home in order for this family to get welfare. Would you agree with me?
100% agree with you. That's 100% true.
Okay. Now, you know well as I know, during the 1960s, 50s, it wasn't until 63 or 64 until Dr. King negotiated with Lyndon Johnson for the voting bill.
Yes.
So that was the reason that Dr. King, that God had called Dr. King to advocate and motivate and organize and mobilize the country to say that the black man should be equal to the white man. But the white man was making all the rules
who said, you got to lead a home, black man. So who now became the father of that young boy? The government.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. We should not be in a position where we're dependent upon the federal government for anything. And any
Absolutely.
Man, the able-bodied man who's not handicapped, should be able to work, get a job. I don't care if you're working at McDonald's. You need to get a job so you can, first of all, take care of yourself and stop living in your mother's house, which is a problem for a lot of young men today who are like 28 mm-hmm. years old, still living in their mom's basement, right? Because my dad did something to me that I needed that my mom wasn't willing to do. When I was 18, my dad kicked me out of the house, told me, you're on your own, get a job, take care of yourself. My mom was kicking and screaming, crying, saying, that's my baby, how dare you do that? But my dad, as a man, he understood that men, you have to do that to them. And the problem is we got a lot of young men today being coddled by their mothers, and because women are naturally more, you know, connected to their sons, they don't want to push their sons out there and force them to become men. That's why you got 28, 29, 30-year-old grown men living in their mom's basement playing video games all day. You know how many guys I know like that right now? Especially, I'm talking about guys that got children that are living like that. So the reality is, sir, your generation, with all due respect, was a generation that had way more honor and just a general righteousness where men conducted themselves like men. If you had children in your generation, that man was expected to go out, work, and provide for your children. That was expected of you. And if you didn't do that, you were shamed by the whole community. That's not the case today. We have a community today that does not hold these young men accountable for their shameful conduct, how they shamefully conduct their lives. If you have children as a grown man and you refuse to provide for them, you shouldn't be able to show your face in public. You should be publicly shamed for that. But we don't do that because our culture today has so morally degraded, it's an embarrassment. We've got so many children being born out of wedlock. Nobody's getting married anymore. The level of immorality is out of control. So if you're going to sit there and talk about racism, I respect that and I understand that. And I respect the people that came before us, especially your generation, sir. But to turn around and try to say that now excuses the immorality and the irresponsibility of this generation, I can't accept that. Because I
How does Black Lives Matter say that? Black Lives Matter never said that.
No, they don't stand for that.
I've met
people affiliated with Black Lives Matter when they had protests in our area that were basically excusing the behavior of young black men and said that the reason young black men are irresponsible is because of white supremacy. And
well,
to me,
you're talking about
ridiculous.
Two different things. I was following you when you said, hey, this seems to be within the American culture now. You know, this whole thing of, you know, moms raising a lot of the, you know, divorce rates, mom raising the household, mothers do not have the same qualities and do not bring the same thing to parenting that fathers do. Fathers bring a lot of unique things, a lot of different things. They empower their kids in ways that, yes, you're right, moms just do not. No matter how good of a mom they are, no matter how strict of a mom, they can be a wonderful parent, but they cannot replace a father, you know. So I was following you because you were talking about this epidemic that is really a United States of America epidemic, you know, fatherless homes. That's not just a black thing. You know, that is a United States of America thing now, you know, so
yeah,
I was following you. But then when you went back and said, you know, Black Lives Matter excuses this bad behavior. Now we talk about a whole different thing. Now we attack it.
No,
you
do.
Know, we back to attacking
because
Black Lives Matter when that's
that.
Not what they stand for.
Well, you may be referring to maybe the ones that, you know, but I'm talking about in my area when they hold rallies. When we'd have public forums, and we'd meet at universities
in
our area, and we would talk.
What
they did was they completely excused any behavior on the part of a black individual, including black criminals who were engaging in criminal activity, and said that anything that a black person does that is quote unquote wrong, they literally said it's the byproduct of white supremacy. Therefore, you cannot hold them accountable. And I, as a,
what
as
about
a black
corporate
man,
America and them ripping off millions? They the biggest criminals in America. And, you know, you don't see people like they don't get held accountable.
Else,
they get to make excuses and the government will bail them out.
But ma'am, I agree with that. But just because someone else does wrong doesn't mean you have to do wrong. The point is this. As a black man, I care about my community. and I especially care about young black men. And I know the struggle that a lot of these young guys are going through because I came up in the exact same struggle. All right, my brother, the reason I chose the life I did is because I witnessed my brother get into the gang life, the drug life, and he got shot, and he's living in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. That's what pushed me to say I'm not going to go down that path because I saw what happened to him. And I'm telling you right now, you have an epidemic of young men in this country who are just determined to go down the pathway of self-destruction. And instead of telling these young men, listen, if you search out knowledge and have the wisdom to apply it, you can find there's a much better path you can take in life that'll lead to self-responsibility, self-respect, and the ability to provide for you and your family in a straight-up, respectable lifestyle. But these young men are being fed
a constant
diet of victim mentality, being told that it's not your fault. Anything that you've done wrong, it's not your fault. It's because of racism. And that I can't accept because the older generation, like the pastor we have here, his generation, I studied what they used to say. Their mentality was just because there's racism doesn't mean that you have to conduct yourself, you know, without in any type of way. You were expected to conduct yourself above a pro. Even in the civil rights protests of the 50s and 60s, they had mandatory dress codes. You had to act a certain way. When you got in front of the cameras, you had to behave in a certain manner. Why? Because they understood that we have to conduct ourselves above reproach. There's no way you're going to sit here and tell me that just because there's racism, just because there's oppression, just because there's white supremacy now excuses you to conduct yourself in a foolish and shameful manner. There's no way you can do that.
So you're talking in general. We're not talking about us because that hasn't come out anybody's mouth tonight.
I'm talking about in general what's going on in the black community. That's a reality. I'm not saying you're saying that. In fact, I agree with a lot of things you brought up, and I respect you for it. But what I'm trying to tell you is we're fighting a war, an intellectual war in our community, to try to convince our young people not to give up. But if you continue to tell them your failure in life is not your fault, that's the first way you set someone up to fail. Because the number one way you set someone on the path to success is to take personal responsibility for your life. If you do not make a man take personal responsibility for himself, he will fail. That's guaranteed. This pastor, who's a man of God who knows scripture, should know, if you know the Bible, what does the book of Proverbs say of a man? It says, if a man lays down or is lazy, he will be clothed in rags, and he will be living in poverty, and his poverty will come upon him like an armed man.
Yeah, it's saying worse than an infidel.
So as a man of God, you should know that. That's my point. Mm-hmm. So men have a different way. We're expected to live differently. Women do not have the same level of expectation like we do. Okay, as a woman, you shouldn't even have to work. You should be in a situation where you have a husband who can provide for the whole family so that you can stay at home and raise the children, rather than both of you have to work and then you got to send your children to daycare, or God forbid, you're a single parent. Now you got to do everything by yourself. That's not how it was supposed to be. That's not how God designed
it. I'm not one of those kind of women, though. I'm one of those, like, I want to work. I love being in my community. I love investing in young people. I love education. So I don't fit that mold.
I'm saying you shouldn't have to. But that's my point. You get what I'm saying? There's a difference between when you want to work versus when you have to work.
Let me say this also, just to jump in. I think we agree more and disagree, but one of the things that we have to understand is that the every community is governed by some type of government, some type of policy, and some type of procedure, right? I mean, we can agree with that, I hope. But what we have to understand is that some of the policies and some of the procedures that's on the books right now across America is foul, okay? And it takes men like you, me, Maria, and different people across America to find out if something, a policy or something in that city government is outdated and it needs to be revised, right? So, case in point. I go to expulsion hearings for black children, okay? And I meet situations between police and the chief of police and blah, 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 blah. All right? One thing that I tell my community here, you have to be accountable, okay? You have to be. If you do something wrong, just man up to it. Hey, I messed up.
At the same time, I expect for our local government to do the same. But it doesn't. It makes excuses. Like you're saying that our young men make excuses, our local government makes excuses. Okay? Our police officers in our community right now, I could walk down the street right now in a tank top. I'm a gang member. I'm a pastor, but I'm a gang member. Well, what did I do to be a gang member? I pastor a church every Sunday. I'm just walking to the store to get a soda pop. Well, you look
but
like
not
a
what
gang.
You did. It's what the other young black men in the community were doing. That's the problem. They're the ones that are giving a bad reputation to our people because of how they're acting.
But this is the point. Just because I'm black doesn't mean I'm a gang member. See,
exactly.
You said it earlier.
You have to acknowledge, that there are black people that
you
do conduct gang activity. That's the problem.
You said it earlier, sir. You said, Dr. King said, judge a man by his character, not by the color of his skin.
Exactly.
Now, exactly.
Well,
so,
you're also forgetting about back in your time, sir, in your generation, what did they used to tell, especially the young men? They said when you go get a job or when you work somewhere, they told you to conduct yourself in a certain way. Why? Because you didn't want to make anything to look bad for your race. Right? They had a saying back in your day talking about being a credit to your race. What was that about? That's the same thing my dad taught me. My first job, my dad said, when you go in there, make sure you behave and work hard so that the next black man who applies, he'll be at a better chance of getting a job. That's a mentality
that's
lost today. That's my point.
I understand where you're coming from.
Your generation, sir, they understood. They understood it. I'm talking about this new generation that doesn't think the same way.
But you keep saying back in my day. How old do you think I am?
Well, I'm assuming you're at least 45, if not more than that.
That was pretty good. That was a good guess.
Yeah, but I could tell. Not only could I tell by your voice, I could tell by the things you were saying. Clearly, you're from the wiser generation, because the generation before was much more wiser than the generation today.
Because you guys were more godly than the ones today. I was raised by my
grandmother. You know what I'm talking about. In your day, people went to church. People believed in God. They believed in living righteously. This generation doesn't believe in living righteously. They're the most ungodly generation we've ever had.
Right, I understand. But what I'm saying is I was raised by my grandmother. So I wasn't actually raised by a man. I was raised by my grandmother.
Right, but I'm assuming she must have been a God-fearing, righteous woman, right?
Right, but I'm saying I took the teachings from my grandmother, and I applied it to my life.
But she was a godly woman. I mean, a godly woman is better than an ungodly man to teach a young man anything. I'd rather have a godly woman than some ungodly man who's immoral to teach a young person. That's just common sense.
And what I did was I took the teachings of my grandmother, and I applied it to my life. Some things when you're a kid, you don't agree with your grandmother until you get older, until you start living. But I would say that a lot of things that she said when I was young, now I understand it. That's why I'm able to build a school called the Fresno Freedom School, where we teach children how to farm. We teach children science. We teach children math. I'm talking about independent from the public education system. We've got 113 children into black colleges across the country, okay? And we have a lot of women, right, that teaches work with our young men and women, right? And we do it as a team, right? Because at the end of the day, you could ask my staff. I ask my students, I said, what is the number one thing I expect from you all? And they say respect, okay? Because respect is something that our children have lost today, you know? I mean, it used to be
believe this nonsense that respect is deserved.
Now it's
exactly.
Like, what do you want? What? You know, I'm like, wait a minute. You don't talk like
that's
that.
That's the point. you remember growing up, I'm sure growing up, you heard that saying of respect is not given, it's earned. You remember that saying? Today, they don't believe that. Today they believe respect is deserved, not earned. They believe that you're supposed to respect them just because they're alive and breathing. That's ridiculous. That's why we got these young girls that act completely out of line, these young guys that don't care about anything, because they have this mentality that just because I'm alive, you're supposed to respect me. That's ridiculous.
Right.
The way you think, sir, it's unfortunate that the majority of the black community today doesn't think that way anymore. If you go back in the day to 1960, the single mother rate in the black community was like 20%. You fast forward to today, it's at like 75. That means there's something has happened culturally within the black community, and that has completely shifted from your generation to this generation. And what I'm trying to tell you, sir, is what shifted, it's not because of racism, because there was probably more racism in 1965 than there is today. What shifted is, culturally, the black community has turned away from God, fundamentally, number one. Number two, they've so gone all in on this victim mentality that they've completely rejected any sense of personal responsibility at all. And that's why our community is the way it is now. And what I'm trying to tell you is the last thing our people need to hear is about racism. Because most of the young black people today, they have a PhD level understanding about racism. They can talk about white supremacy from now until the end of time. But you ask them about how do you manage your check account? How do you develop your credit? They don't even know their right hand from their left hand when it comes to managing money.
Okay. Let's not
forget. What matters is what they need to know versus what doesn't profit you. Like if you're a Christian, what does Scripture say? Scripture talks about things that are profitable versus what's unprofitable. So what's unprofitable is talking about racism. What's profitable is talking about life skills, like money management, finances, how to develop your credit, how to invest money, how to save your money.
Teaching that to the people that we're talking about.
But my point is this: we're going towards the end of the show. We have a 2-hour show. And we like to thank those and our guests for calling in. I didn't get what part of the country you're in.
I'm from Minneapolis. That's in the
East
Midwest.
Coast. Midwest. Okay. Yeah. So what I was saying was when you're talking about don't forget, I don't want us to forget that, you know, how the U.S. government had a big play into destroying the black community. After King got assassinated, the Black Panthers going through the 70s, black folks started getting jobs and whatever in corporate America. I think you agree with me. That's when the U.S. government flooded the black community with crack. Okay? I believe that was the turning point of the black community at that point. Because then, at that point, when the U.S. government guns into Compton in a box cart, left it unlocked with ammo. Those kids down there grabbed those guns, they put drugs and stuff in there. Then they started selling those drugs to the mothers and to the fathers, and then we started having all these crack babies and all this stuff.
You're ignoring a fundamental point. And this is this easy question I could ask you. Do you use drugs?
Let me tell you why I'm not.
Are you a crack addict?
No. No, let me tell you why I'm not.
I want to ask you then, why are you not a crack addict?
No, let me tell you why I'm not.
Okay, tell me. I want to know.
It's because, for one, I was raised with my grandmother. Number two, being raised by her, okay, she taught me fundamental things to do. All right? Now, I'm a man now, okay? I have built a school right now, okay? The things that she taught me, I'm teaching these young men now, okay? I can't be responsible for a whole country. I'm responsible for where I live at, okay? I learn from you. You learn from me, okay? But I cannot forget about who was responsible for putting crack in our community.
But you answered the question. You yourself and said you're not a crack addict and you didn't do it, and you explained because your grandmother taught you, and you made the choices to do what? To live a more responsible lifestyle where you help take care of the community. Now, what's in that entire sequence that seems to be the most important thing is that you made the choice to do something positive rather than negative. And as a man of God, if you know scripture, what does the Bible talk about? It says, no temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man, but God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able to bear. And through every temptation, he will make the way of escape, which means what? In every circumstance, you have the choice to do what's right or what's wrong, and God will never allow you to be tempted more than you can handle. That's fundamental. That's why God holds everyone accountable on judgment day. Drugs in the community, just because there's guns in the community, doesn't mean you have to use drugs, sell drugs, use guns, or shoot people. You don't have to do any of that.
But you're talking about in a community that, number one, has a dysfunctional education. Okay? Number one. So if children are going to get educated,
I don't need to have a high school degree to know not to pick up a gun and shoot somebody.
I'm on the West Coast. Okay, I'll let you talk.
You're talking about in elementary, starting in elementary.
Okay.
Even if it's, ma'am, if I never went to school my entire life, that doesn't mean that you're not capable of being a moral person. Are you telling me that only an educated person knows not to use drugs or not to shoot people?
I'm not telling you anything.
That's what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is this idea that just because there's temptation to do evil doesn't mean you have to do it. That's why God holds people accountable.
Do you know that only 10% of the black population ever commit any kind of violent crime?
I know that completely. That's my point. 90% of the African American population
never commit any kind of violent crime.
You just proved my point. So what's the difference between the 90% that don't versus the 10% that do? The 90% chose not
That the 10% that do, they get so magnified that that's what makes us lose hope.
You're avoiding my question. Part of racism is having that media magnified and put these propaganda out there that we such horrible people. I'm asking you a direct question. The media plays into racism. It always has.
Media has always played into racism.
I'm asking you, we're talking about people's choices.
We need to talk about media because guess what? We're using media right now.
Okay, but ma'am, this is a way to really get to the masses.
Media gets to the masses. We should be concerned about the message that media sends.
Okay, ma'am, you just said, correct me if I'm wrong, you said 90% of the black community doesn't commit the crimes and it's only the 10% that do, right? You said that, right?
Yes.
Okay, so now think about what you just said. So what that tells you is there's a difference between the 90% and the 10%. The main difference is the 90% chose not to commit a crime, and the 10% chose to commit a crime, which then defeats the whole original point that the other gentleman brought up, which he tried to insinuate that because cracks, drugs, and guns were brought into the community, that somehow forced these black people to do these crimes. No one forced them. They chose to do it. Just like you said,
wherever there's poverty, what racism did is it impoverished neighborhoods. It impoverished us.
Okay, ma'am, you're not putting two and two together right now in your mind. You can't say on one side that because the FBI brought drugs and guns into the community, that's why
I didn't say anything. Did I say that?
That's the one that brought up that guns and drugs are brought into the community, and he tried to use that as an excuse for black people who commit crimes.
Did they not bring drugs in the community? Now you see what's happening.
Are you even a Christian?
You see what's happening now. When there's this opioid epidemic, this is the disparity. I believe in God. I will not let any kind of organized anything, religion or anything, control me.
Okay, so you don't even believe in Jesus.
And make up my mind for me. God is in me.
So he teaches me.
The Spirit teaches me. I don't have to claim Christian, Buddha, Akuda, or anything else.
Listen, ma'am, because you're not a Christian, you don't understand this concept of personal accountability. That's clear. But I know that the pastor knows this. Because if he's a man of God, he knows that God holds every human being on earth.
And because you're a Christian, you know everything.
No matter who you are.
And because you're a Christian, you know everything. Because you're a Christian, you can't learn. You never made a mistake before. Are you casting the first stone?
You don't even know what that verse is talking about, man. First of all, you're not
a
Christian.
Yes, I do. I'm asking you a question.
If,
are you
ma'am,
casting
if you
the
know,
first
if you know,
stone?
If you know what that verse
are
is
you
talking
without
about,
sin?
What
are
is,
you
what
without
did
sin?
You, ma'am, okay, hear me, ma'am.
Are you
what
without
did
sin?
You want me to answer it or no?
You're a Christian. Answer it. Are you without sin?
I'm giving you the answer right now. You're not letting me speak. Okay, so what did Jesus tell the woman in John chapter 8 that you're bringing about that was caught in adultery? After all the men went away, what did he tell her at the end?
Go away and sin no more.
What did he say?
Go and sin no more.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying people have choices, and you're
but
accountable for your choices.
But he did not let these people pull their judgment on her.
No, this
he
is not about judgment.
That
this is about...
And so she could walk away.
The moral of that story, the moral of John chapter 8 is showing that God forgives, but then God requires you to repent, which means God requires you to stop doing what's evil and do what's right.
I know, and he also tells us to not judge lest you be judged.
What are you talking about? Do you even know what John chapter... Well,
I'm talking
Matthew
about
7.
You
don't
judging
even know what
people.
Matthew 7 means.
I'm talking about
ma'am,
you
Matthew
judging people. You just judge me on Christianity.
You don't understand what Matthew 7
says. You can judge your own people. You can judge a whole race of everybody. You judge your own people wrongly. You've been judgmental and throwing stones in the whole conversation just about.
I want you to interpret this verse for me. It says in Colossians that the Spirit...
I don't have to interpret nothing. I'll let the Spirit interpret to me what he want to interpret to me. I'm not letting no man interpret nothing to me. The Spirit can interpret it to me. He'll deal with me. If I'm wrong, I don't need no man to tell me or woman to tell me I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, the Spirit will convict me and let me know I'm wrong. That's what a Christian about. That's what a Christian about. That's what a Christian about.
How can you not
and you
better
believe Jesus was out there getting on those folks that sat there and talked and was judging these poor folks, judging these sick folks. So you can go with that.
We're talking about people doing what's right and people doing what's wrong.
The Lord will convict your spirit tonight. You'll remember this conversation for the rest of your life.
Ma'am, you clearly do not have logic. That's the problem here. That's why we can't have a conversation. I can talk to the pastor because he applies logic and critical thinking to what he does. There's a difference. You're constantly emotional.
It was an enlightening conversation.
You
have a good night.
You're not even to be a Christian. How are you going to talk about
Christian? It was an enlightening conversation. You have a good night, sir. I enjoyed the conversation. I really did.
We're at the end of our show here. And we'd like to thank our guests for calling in. I hope that we can agree to a disagree. And we were following him for a minute, and then he got off track again. And so, but, you know, if we're going to hold people accountable, let's hold the whole system accountable, okay? We just can't hold people, children accountable. We have to hold the whole system accountable. We have to hold the police department accountable. We have to hold the school district accountable. We have to hold City Hall accountable, and we have to teach, I believe the answer to our problem is independence from this government. I believe that. And that's why we spend our time here in Fresno building a school called the Fresno Freedom School, where we teach our children, teach our babies. And hey, look, everybody got skeletons in their closet somewhere. Okay. You know, just because, bro, you grew up in the hood, as you say, and your brother got shot and you decided to go get an education, well, great. I'm happy for you. You know, I'm glad you made that choice. But choices like that, you know, everybody just not able to just wake up in the morning and say, hey, I'm going to go to Harvard. Hey, I'm going to go to UCLA. Hey, I'm going to do this. Hey, I'm going to do that. Some people need more encouragement. You know, some people need a little bit more time to process, you know. I mean, I haven't heard you one time tonight say anything about holding the government accountable for anything. It's always the black man. And that's why I told you that the welfare system, which was controlled by the government, was racist and told our black men to leave the home. And it divided the community. So our young black boys really never had fathers in the home
because the father loved his family so much that he left. And so, you know, to say that, you know, like we can just go out and get a job here in the community. No, it's not that simple. And no, it's not that easy because we're dealing with institutionalized racism, systemic racism every day on a daily basis, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days out the year. We're dealing with racism. So black lives do matter. It will always matter. And you can say that we're, you know, teaching whatever you said, wrong stuff for our children. No, we're going to teach them right. And that's what we're doing. And if you're teaching the children on the East Coast, the Midwest, you know, about financing and all that good stuff, great. I'll tilt my hat to you. I mean, we need more men like that. I mean, that's this Saturday. I'm calling men together right now so we can have a conversation about what we need to do about our gang problem here in our community. So, yes, we're being accountable. We are being accountable. And so we're at the end of our show. And I just want to say thank you all for tuning in. Thank our guests, Alice, for calling in, and those who are listening. Go to the archives and listen to the different shows that we do. We'll be coming on tomorrow. I believe we have Aline Reed tomorrow, I believe, on our show at 8 o'clock. Just want to say thank you. Thank you, caller, for calling in. Don't be a stranger. Call in again. Look up Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr., YouTube, Google my name, see the work that we're doing out here on the West Coast, and maybe one day we'll get a chance to meet each other. Maybe you invite me out to your community, see the work that you're doing out there with our young black men in the African-American community. We want to say hotep. We want to say good night. Power to the people. Whose streets are streets? Black power. People united will never be divided, and we're going to say good night.